listening to the Building Heroes podcast, which stands for Building Healthy, Energy Efficient, and Resilient Occupants, as an educational series. The Building Heroes podcast is proudly sponsored by Better Bricks and was created to help bridge the informational gaps that can occur between industry, academia, and experts in the industry doing this kind of work every single day. This podcast varies in topics per quarter and per year, generally featuring voices of industry experts and thought leaders in the fields of construction, design, technology, specialty trades, and skilled trades, as well as those who work in the humanities, energy efficiency, social science, and policy. If you want to learn more about Better Bricks, you can find them online at betterbricks.com, a commercial resource for energy efficiency. Joining me today on the Building Heroes podcast is Mark Fretz and Siobhan Rockcastle of the University of Oregon's Integrated Design Lab and Institute of Building Health. Siobhan, do you want to start by introducing yourself?
Sure. Thank you, Shelby, for that introduction. So my name is Siobhan Rockcastle, and I'm an associate professor of architecture at the University of Oregon in the Department of Architecture, which is in the College of Design here on campus in Eugene. And I have been affiliated with our IDL, which is called the Energy Studies and Buildings Lab, but I'll explain a little more about how that relates to our overall umbrella of research in a second. I have been affiliated with that lab for 7.5 years now, I think it's been. So I joined at the very end of 2017. And I came overseas here from my doctoral research in Switzerland. I did my PhD at the École Polytechnique Fédérale de Lausanne and graduated in 2017. And have been working with a great group of people over the last several years. I mentioned that we have this entity called the Institute for Health in the Built Environment, which was formed really shortly before I arrived. Mark, you could correct me on that, but I think either the year I arrived or shortly before. And it's essentially an umbrella of three different organizations and labs that we have. So the Energy Studies and Buildings Lab, which is our oldest longstanding lab. I think it's been going on since the 80s, so for over 40 years now, formed by Charlie G.Z. Brown in the 80s. And then also joint with the Baker Lighting Lab, which is the lab that I chair, and then the Biology in the Built Environment Center. And together, we do a lot of really exciting research that spans topics of health and energy efficiency and building systems research. So I would say more broadly, we study the influence of the built environment on humans and the planet at multiple scales. And that kind of crosses over from the energy efficiency space into the healthy humans and healthy planet space. And maybe I can then kick it over to Mark to introduce himself.
Yeah. Hi, Shelby. Great to be with you today. My name is Mark Fretz. And I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Architecture, and I'm in Portland, which is our other lab location, but often go back and forth between Eugene and Portland as we work together quite closely. My background is in architecture, but also I've been a commissioned officer in the public health service, so have practiced out in rural areas of the state as well as practicing architecture. So bring both of those skill sets to the work that I do, and very involved in energy studies and buildings lab activities. I know since many years, actually since G.Z. Brown was a professor still at university. So really glad to be here and talk about a few of the projects that we've got going on.
Awesome. Thanks, you too. So just to kind of frame this conversation within the context of our other conversations that we've had as part of this Integrated Design Lab series, would one of you guys like to kind of explain the history of how you've gotten to this research consortium and your center and the institute, and how that may, I know it doesn't entirely differ, but your Integrated Design Lab operates under a different name. You guys do not generally completely out of field work, but it is fairly unique. So do you guys want to talk about that and maybe the history of the UO IDL?
Yeah, sure. So the Energy Studies and Buildings Lab, as Chevy mentioned, goes back a long ways. Before there was a term called sustainability, you know, that lab was practicing sustainability, thinking about how we can conserve energy, use it more efficiently. And was doing integrated design at a time when really nobody else was doing that, working together closely with engineers early on in projects with contractors, and really thinking holistically about building design. And so over the years, we've broadened that definition of what integrated design looks like. In fact, the Biology in the Built Environment Center was founded a little over a decade ago, and that was a pretty radical transition from just working with engineers and contractors to working together with evolutionary biologists, thinking about the indoor microbiome and how that's influenced by how we design buildings and how we operate buildings, how we heat and cool them, how we ventilate them. And so we, in the kind of a spirit of that transdisciplinary design, we've expanded that now to really include many other disciplines. We work together with chemists, with physicians, we work together with toxicologists, and even those in sports product design to think about health in the built environment. So our work has broadened out beyond just that narrow focus of integrated design. And a few years ago, as Chevy mentioned, I believe it was 2017, we launched the Institute for Health in the Built Environment, which just creates a bigger umbrella to bring together those labs, such as the Energy Studies and Buildings Lab, the Biology in the Built Environment Center, and the Baker Lighting Lab, to think more broadly and also to include industry very intentionally into that organization. So we have an organization that we call Build Health, which is an industry research consortium that allows us to not only get better ideas into our research pipeline, what are the really relevant things that we should be considering, but also have a conduit for applying those ideas out into the built environment, really with the individuals that are designing and constructing buildings. So that's a newer organization since the Institute launched, but that's really allowed us to expand this idea of integrated design and think about how we design better environments. As Chevy mentioned, we're really focused on multiple scales of health, from the individual in the building to the community and the planet, which definitely includes energy flows, and energy efficiency is a core of that. So we need, because of that, to really have a wide range of expertise at the table. And that's what the Institute provides. Chevy, maybe you have some other thoughts on how we do that, but I would say it's very rich and rewarding work.
Yeah, I think that's a great overview. It's a fairly unique structure from what I've been used to in past labs and colleges that I've worked in, and just that I think there is an emphasis in today's sort of building design education that interdisciplinarity is a good thing, something we want to achieve. But we really do have a number of areas of expertise, both within the institute and beyond, that allow us to do projects that are really quite radically transdisciplinary. And I think that's been really exciting for me since joining the University of Oregon to be a part of this. And we have a sort of Build Health symposium that is coming up here in a couple of weeks. And each one of the projects that we're presenting has sort of like an academic member that's sometimes us, sometimes in an affiliated university, and someone from industry. So we really do integrate industry quite directly into a lot of our research projects.
Great. Thank you guys for explaining that so eloquently. I think that leads us straight into what is your guys' range? What does that mean for the projects that you take on, and what specifically foci? No, focuses. What specific focuses or foci? I don't.
I like the word foci.
Foci. That's not how you pronounce it, is it?
Foci. Actually, yeah, I think
Yeah.
it's foci,
Okay.
but I don't know. Yeah.
What kind of work do you guys take on? What are your specialties? What are the things that make you really passionate about the work that you do? And that will probably lead us straight into some examples. But as far as range goes, what kind of work do you take on, and why are you so excited about that?
Well, I can say, because we just have been going through this process of creating these sort of like little infographics that summarize the kind of work we do. And so I think broadly, if you were to kind of outline the sort of topics, I think we do quite a lot of work on indoor environmental quality, which could be kind of broken down between Sort of air quality, as well as more perceptual factors like acoustics and visual comfort. We do work that ranges from sort of like the visual quality of the environment to access to view, influence of light, both daylight and electric lighting. And then we do quite a lot of work on building technology innovations and development in that area. And I would sort of reference, I'm sure Mark's going to jump in here in a second on this, but work that has to do with innovations in panelized mass timber construction and different kinds of mass timber assemblies, and the influence that has on things like infiltration through a facade assembly and structural integrity and its resilience to earthquakes. Mass timber is a retrofit material. So, and then along those same lines, kind of bio-based materials from an insulation and acoustics property as well as other finished materials. And then I'll let Mark jump in because I'm sure I missed several.
Yeah, I mean, in the same realm of indoor environmental quality, microbiome research has been a lot of what we've been doing because that's kind of the canary in the coal mine to how a building is being operated. And it's, we're all exposed to microbes indoors, and we've experienced that during COVID and, and how it can not be so good sometimes. But also, it's really important to have microbes that are beneficial to us and from which we've evolved. So, we've been doing a lot of that work, and it also relates to the materials that we're using. Chevy mentioned some of the mass timber work. We're now looking at mass timber and wood products in general with in relation to microbiomes on their surfaces so that we can get these products into environments that are not common, such as hospitals, and reduce impacts from the materials that we select. So a lot of work in many different areas that do converge often in projects that we work on.
Right. And I also, we should mention, we do work on indoor agriculture as well, and the influence of sort of plants and water systems as well. So things you don't necessarily think of as traditional building materials and but are very much part of the built environment. And then the last one, of course, is energy efficiency. I didn't mention that, but I would say most all of our projects have an energy narrative that is then also grounded into a health narrative. So I think that's been kind of the novelty of what our institute is doing, is really trying to bridge those things, which frankly don't always reinforce one another in the same ways. Sometimes they conflict, and that produces a lot of really interesting research questions.
Yeah, and I of course think that the work that all of our labs are doing is groundbreaking and awesome and so important. I think what's really interesting about the work that you guys specifically are doing is that you're not taking health in the built environment at face value. You're really kind of breaking that up, and what does that mean, and what are the vectors of health in the built environment just beyond people being comfortable and having reasonably healthy air to breathe. So, as far as some of the examples of projects that you've done, I've seen a lot of the work that you did during COVID as far as monitoring spread of viruses and those kinds of things. What other kind of work do you want to highlight in this conversation that you think other people might be interested in? Sidebar, as far as audience goes, we have a lot of industry people that listen in. We have a lot of technicians in industry, so like very skilled labor that are working on HVAC, and it just kind of becomes background noise to them. We also work a lot with students, so there will be students listening in on this podcast from specifically like Julia's building science course and otherwise. So just to frame that audience for you, what other kind of project highlights do you want to include?
Yeah, I'll maybe start, and Chevy can chime in. We've been working through the Institute with a number of different collaborating labs, and one of those labs is the Tallwood Design Institute, which is a collaboration between the University of Oregon's Department of Architecture and Oregon State University's College of Engineering and Forestry. And that is an institute that's focused on using mass timber to design buildings with lower impact. The work that we've been doing most recently that I've been very excited about is, again, Chevy mentioned this earlier, is thinking about these panelized systems that can have really good energy efficiency, but also material efficiency, materials that have low impact and support communities and rural, especially rural communities, where the materials come from and where they can be manufactured, and also the housing and buildings that we need in the urban community. So one of those projects that I'll start with is looking at how to use mass ply panels, which is basically plywood on steroids. These things can be, anywhere from 2 inches thick by, 48 feet long and 12 feet wide, up to even 2 feet thick panels. So they can be massive panels. And we're using them in a thinner format, so a 2 inch and a 3 inch thick format, that can be then cut by using a digital technology, so CNC machines, to produce parts, like a kit of parts for housing that can be flat packed, so that you basically have like a flat pack, akin to a flat pack IKEA bookshelf that comes to your site, and then they go together in large pieces that go together rather quickly. And because the pieces are so large, there are fewer joints, and so you can get really tight construction that improves the efficiency of the house. And we're looking at this in a small 2-bedroom, 1.5 bath house right now that we've been mocking up at the Tallwood Design Institute's lab in Corvallis, the Emerson lab. And that product can be CNC cut ahead of time with all the locations for screws and fasteners that make the assembly much quicker. And we're hoping that this is going to drive down the cost for housing, which we all feel right now on the West Coast incredibly acutely, right? So this is something that is trying to bridge the cost of housing with the material sourcing issues, forestry health, as well as energy efficiency and operational costs in a housing unit that's made for the missing middle, right? Or what's also been called workforce housing. So that's something that we've been working on for a number of years now. We've got the first prototype that's been completed. We're getting ready to have a commercial contractor fabricate the second prototype so we can have a better cost model. And then we'll do a whole range of instrumentation in the house for testing over the course of about a year. Everything from acoustics and vibration and infiltration, moisture in the wall assemblies. We'll look at that over time, and we'll assess energy efficiency with the unit. So it's going to be a research unit outdoors. We'll also look at daylighting. I'm looking at Chevy, who's running the Baker Lighting Lab, and so that's an important component as well, how to get good daylighting and passive strategies into that project to save energy. And so that's one that I will say has been a kind of a project that I've been very passionate about and connected to for several years now. One other thing I'll mention about that project is we are using insulation that's from a bio-based source, so either wood fiber insulation or potentially hemp insulation. So again, materials that have lower impact, and because that insulation is outboard on these panels, it also has a high performance to it as well. So we're investing more in the design of this unit so that we can have improved energy efficiency and not rely so much on just pouring a bunch of energy in to make us comfortable.
Well, and also something that's like seismic, has seismic resilience in a part of a country that is expecting, rather significant seismic activity. So I think that's been really interesting to watch, sort of from the outside of that project, is just all of these additional non-energy benefits that come with the energy upgrades, that provide these other resilience traits to the housing. So one of the projects that I would highlight would be a collaboration that my lab and Alan Mahich and my lab have been doing with Quinn Evans Architecture over the last 2 years as part of an AIA Upjohn grant that we were awarded. And this project kind of came about through sort of ongoing relationship with a former grad of ours named Denise Gravel, who graduated several years ago and had done her Master's of Science thesis in our lab. And she went on to work in industry and ended up connecting me with a lunch and learn at Quinn Evans about 2 years ago. And through that work, the firm got kind of interested in like, hey, well, what would it take for us to actually study some of these open-ended questions related to the effects of light on human health? And by human health, I'm specifically talking about the circadian effects of lighting in buildings. And so we applied for this AIA Upjohn grant, which was awarded, and that was to study the influence of building renovation on human health from a circadian perspective, but really with that focus on existing buildings. So a lot of the work that has been done in circadian health in buildings is really looking at sort of optimizing the design solution to get things, as close to optimal as possible. And I think our criticism of that is in reality, a lot of our building stock is already built, right? A lot of the work we do as design professionals is going to be in adaptive reuse and renovation. And in that case, we have a lot more limitations and restrictions on the kinds of design interventions that are a affordable, non-carbon intensive and responsible for the project scope. So in this project, we collaborated on this sort of analysis of a series of design interventions at more of a shoebox scale, where we varied things like ceiling height and interior reflectance and window to wall ratio and shading interventions, and then looked at how that influenced the potential to meet eye level light requirements to promote circadian health. And then we also, applied this to some more detailed case studies that were provided by Quinn Evans through their architectural design practice. And we're able to show sort of the significance of varying things as intensive as new window openings to things as non-intensive as just brighter interior surface reflectances, which is something that actually can have a rather large effect on how much light reaches the eye and can promote that health in the daytime. So that has produced a report and a kind of design guide, which is really geared toward design professionals. And we're working on some additional publications. But I think that project really highlights, what we love is that sort of like collaboration that doesn't quite quit. We work with students during their time here, and then they go out in the world and they start practicing, and we maintain those relationships. And sometimes it turns into additional research down the road. And we have another one right now that's the same kind of situation, a grad who's sort of has an ongoing research question that now is opening the door to a possible project with them on trauma-informed design and looking at neuroinclusivity. So yeah, that's what I would highlight.
Yeah. Go ahead,
Well,
Mark.
I was just going to say, I was going to follow up on a couple of threads that Chevy mentioned and use that as maybe a segue to another project that I think is worth highlighting. So, she mentioned resilience, which has been a big focus of the work that we've been doing lately, especially, with different natural events, weather, patterns that can be, we've experienced here in the Northwest, especially heat waves and weather that can, require us to maybe not even have a grid. We had a cold snap a while ago that brought a lot of power lines down. So resilience is a big one. And then existing building stock and how do we deal with that, right? Those are two things that we've been focused on in a project that is also using mass timber to and these panelized systems to retrofit the facade of existing buildings for more resilience. And that means seismic resilience, but also energy resilience as well. And we have two projects. One is a residential version of this, which is based on the European Energiesprong model of putting a new facade over an existing facade, essentially, by scanning that existing building. And then the second one is using this panelized system for low-rise commercial buildings, of which there are many. And many of these were built in an era that, had tinted glazing and the daylighting wasn't optimal, or just aging and the aesthetics are not, what an owner may want. But instead of building new, what we did was approach this as a way to reduce the embodied carbon by just upgrading the facade as part of the seismic, as part of the lateral force resisting system, but also as part of a better thermal enclosure. And in so doing, we worked with Chevy's lab together with Alan Mahich to think about lighting and how we could improve daylighting at the same time and reduce solar gain to really get a much better indoor environment. Maybe Chevy, you want to mention some of that work that you did as part of this larger project.
Yeah, well, and that's one of a great example of, when you're upgrading an aspect of the building, you can have these kind of positive benefits on other performance aspects of the building. So by removing those kind of narrow horizontal ribbon windows and replacing them with higher floor to ceiling openings, vertical openings for windows, you're actually going to allow daylight to get deeper into the space. So in that case, we were able to see significant energy savings through daylight harvesting by just getting better daylight performance, deeper daylight penetration from the facade. So that was a great project to illustrate those sort of secondary benefits as well.
Yeah, and I'll also mention this is a project that was a close collaboration with industry. We worked together with Swinerton and Timber Lab on the constructability of these systems. We worked together with FFA, Architecture and Interiors, and then engineering faculty at Oregon State. So very collaborative. Swinerton did a very detailed cost model, and that was important too because, what will it cost? Is this feasible? Well, it turns out that yes, it is, and it was actually a very cost-efficient way to make these upgrades overall versus new construction. So that was, again, a way I think that we could highlight working together with industry has produced better results than if we had just been academics on our own. And this collaboration has been really, really impactful.
That's kind of everyone wants like a two for one. That's like a four for one, right? Because you upgrade the aesthetics of the building, you add seismic stability, you get better energy efficiency, and you have this sort of increased like visual daylight, comfort. So, and it's cost effective, right?
Oh, we
So
also
it's a
added
five for
operable windows too, so we could get ventilation when the grid goes down and be comfortable. So yeah, maybe it's a five for one.
It's a
Yeah,
five for one. Yeah, there we go.
I think that's got to be a sign of either a good researcher or good research in general, that you end up with more questions and you have more areas to explore and more opportunities for benefits really come out of these kinds of collaborative integrated projects, right? Like what a designer thinks is good for an environment might conflict with the constructability or the cost effectiveness and meeting. There in the middle, I always imagine like these are dials of optimization that we're trying to meet. It may have too many cooks in the kitchen at times, and like that's definitely been a problem that we've encountered working with industry. But your outcomes are so much more valuable and so much more applicable when you're working in this integrated setting with people that are doing the work and are affected by the work. And we oftentimes learn things that we didn't expect along the way.
Absolutely. And it's also a way to create, partnerships that might start out as a series of research questions, like what if we could do this, and then can transition into applicability in real world projects, because in a way, professionals, would love to be able to integrate new technologies, but don't necessarily have the fee structure to be able to integrate research into their practice directly. And so through these kinds of collaborations, we allow them to pilot and test things, and we can work with them to show the feasibility, and then these things have a higher likelihood of making it into, into real projects. So I think that's really exciting and rewarding for us, especially when it can make the leap from the lab to the real world.
Yeah, and we talk all the time about the integrated design labs being a wonderful resource for the industry. Chevy, you've mentioned a couple times that you've worked with previous students as they go out into the real world or the professional world, and they take a lot of the knowledge and the research skills and just a elevated understanding of what sustainability and health in the built environment mean. Do you have any other awesome examples of, your students going out and creating change in the industry and other examples of how like a student idea evolved into something really meaningful that you guys are proud of?
I mean, I think Mark has got a couple of like really immediate ones that are kind of actively happening. I don't know, maybe you want to talk about some of the bio-based material work and where that's going.
Yeah, I mean, we've got quite a few different projects that started with students, and we'll see where they go. But one of those is a project that started with Charlotte Kamen, who was a student in our lab and was working on mycelium as an insulation for acoustics. And that one was just, we wrote a grant. We wanted to experiment a little bit. with ways to create lower embodied carbon materials for higher performing assemblies, a thermal or not thermal rather, but acoustic assemblies in mass timber buildings. And so that one we've worked on for a while. We've got a paper coming out. We also have a student in Portland in our lab, so we employ a lot of students in the institute. We also, bring this research to students in the classroom, and so there are a few different pathways that we disseminate the ideas, and then students take these and disseminate them into the larger workforce. But one of the projects right now is another student's been working on an infiltration project where we are looking at mass timber joint designs for building enclosures to create tighter assemblies so that we could have more durable, higher energy performing wall assemblies. And so that's another one that I'm sure will make its way out of the lab into the studio, and then from there, who knows where, into industry. Those two come to mind immediately, Chevy. Let me just think a little longer. I'm sure you've got some others.
Well, yeah, I was going to jump in too because I think it's worth mentioning that the University of Oregon has sort of a unique structure in that all of our tenure-related faculty teach both studio design and subject area courses. And that's not always common, especially when you have faculty that come in with a special expertise area, maybe like structural design or mechanical systems integration. And then, sometimes they get kind of stuck teaching like just the technical courses in a curriculum. And we really have this structure where we teach across the curriculum. So this term I'm teaching a second year design studio, third studio ever, and get to start to bring in sustainable design principles really early. And then I also teach vertical studios and terminal sort of end stage. Terminal sounds really dark and gloomy, but comprehensive design at the end of their degree. And that I think that's really been valuable because we can bring in these integrated design principles as like technical know-how in the subject area courses, as more research subjects in the advanced courses, and as really true design process in the studio. And then we get, spillover of students saying, "Hey, this was really cool. I'd like to study this further through an independent study that may or may not turn into a research project." And then we integrate students all the time in our experimental work, when we're doing field sampling. And so I'd say really across the board, they're probably our biggest source of sort of labor and know-how that we work with and we train. And I think I was just looking at this the other day in my office that of the last sort of like 12 papers I've published, I think 9 of them have been co-authored by students, and many of them have been co-authored by both undergrads and grads. So that's kind of an example of how we bring that in. And then I guess to the point of like what they do after that, right? Like a whole range of things. We have students that go in to become professional architects. We have students that have transitioned into more internal consulting roles. Students that go into engineering firms that are bringing this sort of design technical assistance overlap, students that have gone more into like developing tools and software, and those have become academics themselves. So I think it's really a broad range of opportunities. Certainly, I've had students say, "Hey, I interviewed for this job that is in the design firm that I most wanted to get." And I beat out, some of my fellow colleagues because we could spend 20 minutes talking about this really targeted project where I did some energy modeling, and that was really unique in my portfolio, right? So I think it can add edge to for a lot of students to get that sort of expertise, even in a more design-centric job, if that's what they choose later.
Yeah, I think it's really important to note that we need to have a workforce that is not just consisting of a few specialists in a few offices, right? But really everybody going out, we want to have these ideas at their disposal so that they are disseminated really widely through project teams and professional settings, and can really pull these threads of energy performance, better building design, higher performing buildings, through the projects that they're working on. If it's just one person that's a specialist in an office, it's oftentimes difficult to really get these things into projects. But by having these things really be very pervasive in our studio work and in the lab setting, these students are really going all over the place. And a lot of them are not just going into architecture firms nowadays. We've got students that are very interested in going to work for contractors, especially since they're doing a lot more of the digital manufacturing. So there's a wide range of positions that students are taking after they graduate. And we find our alumni all over the world from our lab. I mean, they really go widely after their years here at Oregon into the into the professional environment. So it's a lot of what we do is just workforce training and getting that workforce of the 21st century ready for the challenges that they'll face.
Yeah, and thank you for all of that. I was one of those students here at WSU and can appreciate the trajectory, opportunities, and just wealth of knowledge that being a part of a research organization like this, especially in an undergrad when you might not otherwise have a lot of exposure to research, I think is super valuable. To kind of start to wrap us up. If I were a building owner and I had a grand idea, or I knew that something needed to happen in order to make my building more efficient, more comfortable for the occupants, get it leased out at a market rate, what does that relationship with you guys look like? Or how do people out there reach out to you, get started working on a project together, and can you describe that process a little bit?
Yeah, we're frequently talking to a lot of professionals out there and trying to figure out what the right project research fit is. And so a lot of times people find us via our website. We've got a website that is buildhealth.uoregon.edu, and that's got links to this institute website, but it's also got links to the other labs that are within that institute. And our contact information is on that website. That's one way. Another way is when we speak at conferences, we meet a lot of building owners and operators. There's LinkedIn. There are many other ways that I think people can find us these days, but the website seems to be a good front door, and often they'll reach out and we'll set up a meeting, and sometimes that involves a tour of the lab, talking about the different work that we do. We've got actually one coming up this week where we're going to meet with an individual that's got a lot of senior living facilities that we're going to talk about how to improve those environments. So there's a number of ways, but the website is kind of the front door that we're trying to curate.
Yeah, and I'd say that, I think there's this challenge. I think you described a scenario, Shelby, where a building owner knows they want to do something but doesn't really maybe know where to start beyond more conventional process. And I think that's where 40 plus years of experience in the lab network allows us to sort of have some unique relationships. And so somebody might come to us and say, "Hey, I'm really interested in doing this," or I'd love the idea of pushing this new building material or this new system, but I don't really know like who to talk to about that." And I think that's one of the advantages of our professional industry consortium too, is that we do have a lot of those contacts. So I think some of it is matchmaking with folks that have done projects that are similar or might be able to provide services, a service overview for something like that. And then we may or may not be fully involved. So sometimes it's like we're matchmaking the relationship. Other times, we can help facilitate a more, like a more novel, let's say, testing of some type of a system that might be too expensive for a contractor, to do feasibility on, but we might be able to provide that. So I'd say it's about relationships as much as it is about the kind of research we do, is being able to connect folks that do really exciting work that's pushing the boundaries.
Awesome. As far as the work that you do, the students that you teach and engage with through research, is there anything else that you guys think is super important, or projects maybe? Mark, I know you were taking notes over there. Is there anything else you wanted to hit on, big picture, before we wrap it up and you give your final words of wisdom?
I think we hit some of the highlights. We're doing a lot of mass timber related work right now because we think it's an exciting opportunity to try and decarbonize the materials themselves that we're using, and also there are so many different connections to that, environmental quality, acoustics. There's a lot of work there that we still can explore. Siobhan mentioned a former student that she's working with at Quinn Evans, Denise. Denise actually started the study years ago when she was a student at the university, looking at mass timber and biophilia and the impact on thermal comfort, which relates to energy use. And so all of these threads kind of they come together, and we have so many projects that it's really hard to even identify which one you love the most. They're all kind of special in their unique way.
Yeah, I would just add that, there we're at an exciting influx, I think, in time right now. And I think some might have a more pessimistic outlook, but I would say, we went through this sort of energy efficiency push and that sort of revolution of trying to transition and decarbonize our buildings. And I'd say we're like making progress. We're definitely not there yet. We've not arrived, but I think a lot of us have developed know-how to be able to improve energy efficiency in buildings. But we're at this time now where we're trying to like that and, like through decarbonization, there are these other benefits that might positively impact humans in buildings. And I think that's really exciting. There is a lot of work left to be done. So I know this isn't the words of wisdom point yet, but it's just for every project we do, we create two more project ideas, and we need folks that are interested, that are, want to collaborate, that are excited to learn how to solve these really complex problems, because I think we need smart people out there that are working on these things. So that's just my plug. It's always going to be like, come to one of the IDLs. Like, we need students that are excited and want to work on these challenges.
Well, thank you guys for joining me today on our podcast. If you are a listener and you want to get a hold of Mark or Siobhan, where do we find you? And this is our point of closing thoughts.
Yeah, you can find on our website buildhealth.uoregon.edu, and build health is one word, no space. You can find our staff information. Our bios and email addresses are on there, so that's probably the easiest way to find how to contact us. There's also just kind of a general inquiry email address on that website that we monitor as well. So that's a good starting point.
Yeah, we create a companion document with every single episode, so I will be sure to include a link to that explicitly front and center for everybody who's listening. Mark Fretz is the co-director of the Institute for Health in the Built Environment, and Siobhan, who I often call Chevy, is the co-director of the Institute for Health in the Built Environment and the chair of the Baker Lighting Laboratory at the University of Oregon.
You can find Building Heroes on anywhere that you stream podcasts or music, including Apple, Google, Spotify, and you can find us on RSS. All of our companion documents are available to anybody who is listening on our website at idcl.wsu.edu/building-heroes-podcast.